Welcome to Project I Am with Dr. David Schloss. Grab your coffee, green tea, or smoothie. Find your favorite listening spot or put on your walking shoes. Ready? Let's go.
What if the feelings you're trying hardest to avoid are the very ones that hold the key to your healing? In this episode of Project I Am, I invite you into a powerful conversation about the courage that it takes to sit in your feelings, to stop running, stop numbing, and finally feel what's been waiting to be heard. Drawing from real-life stories, somatic wisdom, and leading psychological research, we explore how facing discomfort, rather than escaping it, can lead to lasting emotional freedom. Whether you're a mental health professional, a student, or simply someone trying to make peace with your inner world, this episode is your permission to feel, your guide to staying present, and your reminder that every emotion has a purpose. This is the work, and this is Project I Am. But before we begin, here's the disclaimer.
This podcast is created for educational and inspirational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional mental health services, diagnosis, or treatment. Although Dr. Schloss is a licensed mental health professional, listening to this podcast does not create a therapeutic relationship. The content shared here is intended to support your personal development and mental wellness journey, but it should not be considered medical or psychological advice tailored to your individual situation. If you are in need of therapeutic support, please seek help from a qualified mental health provider in your area. If you are experiencing a mental health crisis, please contact a local crisis line or emergency services immediately. Views expressed by any guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily reflect views of Dr. Schloss or the views of Project I Am.
Hello and welcome to Project I Am. Today we're going to talk about sitting in your feelings, truly feeling and processing emotions instead of pushing them away. As therapists often say, you need to feel your feelings. Now, it sounds kind of cliche, but it carries a powerful truth. Many of us spend a lot of energy trying to avoid uncomfortable emotions. We distract ourselves when sadness creeps in, or we tense up and we deny our anxiety. Why do we do that? And what happens if instead we allow ourselves to fully experience our emotions? In this episode, we'll explore the psychology behind sitting with discomfort, drawing on research in emotional regulation, mindfulness, acceptance therapies, somatic experiencing, and dialectical behavior therapy. Along the way, I'll share some real-life anecdotes, with details changed for confidentiality purposes, to illustrate how embracing emotions can actually be really healing. So get comfortable, maybe take a deep breath, and let's dive in. So why do we avoid our feelings? It's human nature to flinch away from pain. Psychologist Carl Jung famously noted that people will do almost anything to avoid facing their own soul. From an evolutionary standpoint, this makes absolute sense. Our brains are wired to avoid threats and harm. If you touch a hot stove, the immediate impulse is to pull your hand back. Similarly, when we are experiencing emotional pain or discomfort, an instinctive response is to pull away or to shut down. We might numb out our feelings of grief by working overtime or escape loneliness by scrolling endlessly on our phones. This experiential avoidance, attempting to avoid or suppress unwanted internal experiences like feelings, thoughts, or memories, is extremely common. In fact, it is so common that one researcher joked it's like an absurd but universal human pastime, running from our own feelings. Consider this quick example. Imagine a therapy client, I will call her Sarah, who lost her mother a few months ago. When sadness wells up, Sarah immediately finds a distraction. She cleans the house, she checks emails, or calls a friend to talk about anything except her grief. If tears start to form, she quickly forces a smile and says, "Oh, I'm fine." Sarah has unknowingly decided that feeling her grief is too much to bear, so she constantly escapes it. Now, many of us can relate to some version of this. Avoiding feelings often seems like a safe short-term solution. I mean, after all, who wants to feel pain, fear, or sadness? However, psychologists have found a big irony here. The more we avoid or suppress difficult emotions, the more those emotions and their effects tend to persist or even worsen. In other words, what we resist persists. Researcher Stephen Hayes and colleagues described how experiential avoidance can actually maintain or amplify psychological distress rather than reduce it. By trying so hard to not feel pain, we may inadvertently create more suffering. Think about pushing a beach ball underwater. You can force it down for a while, but it takes constant effort and it's likely to pop up with force. Similarly, suppressing emotions often backfires. Studies show that when people suppress emotional expression, their psychological stress responses, like heart rate and blood pressure, actually increase. For example, psychologist James Gross found that hiding feelings, suppressing facial expressions of emotion, can ramp up activation of the sympathetic nervous system, the body's fight or flight response. In one experiment, people who stifled their emotional reactions showed greater signs of internal arousal, like higher blood pressure, than those who let themselves express those emotions. So while expression may keep you looking composed on the outside, inside, your body may actually be paying a price. Now, avoidance can take many forms beyond just suppressing a facial expression. Some individuals steer clear of any situation that might trigger uncomfortable feelings. For instance, avoiding a relationship so that you don't feel vulnerable, or avoiding challenges so that you don't feel anxiety. Now, others turn to substances, food, or compulsive behaviors to numb emotions. Now, unfortunately, these strategies provide only temporary relief. The underlying feelings remain unresolved, often resurfacing later with greater intensity. Clinical psychology labels this phenomenon experiential avoidance, and it's been linked to a range of mental health problems, including anxiety disorders, depression, and PTSD. In fact, a recent review, Wang et al. In 2024, emphasized that excessive reliance on avoidance, like overusing emotional suppression, is a significant risk factor for developing a long-term psychopathology. Simply put, avoiding pain can create more problems in the long run. Now, when I say this, none of this is to blame anyone for avoiding feelings. As we noted, it's a very natural impulse. Even seasoned therapists can catch themselves instinctively tensing up against a wave of emotion. Our brains learned early on that negative emotions might be dangerous or overwhelming, so pulling away seems self-protective. There's also societal conditioning. We're often taught from childhood to stop crying, be strong, or keep it together. Such messages, sometimes different for different genders and cultures, suggest that expressing or feeling emotions is undesirable or weak. So by adulthood, many people habitually bottle up their feelings in order to appear in control. Sarah, in our example, learned from her family that life goes on, don't dwell on the sadness. So her instinct was to stay busy and not dwell on her grief. The problem is that when we shut the door on pain, we also shut the door on healing. Let me just say that again. When we shut the door on pain, we also shut the door on healing. Unfelt emotions don't actually disappear. They often go underground and manifest in other ways, like chronic stress, irritability, numbness, or even physical symptoms. You might notice, for example, that when you avoid confronting anger or sorrow, you might start to have tension headaches or trouble sleeping. As one famous book title by Bessel van der Kolk suggests, the body keeps the score. Our bodies remember and hold the stress of unfelt emotions, keeping us in a state of unease until we address what's inside. We essentially create an internal battlefield when we refuse to face our feelings, a battle between parts of ourselves. And honestly, There are no winners in that war. So if avoiding or suppressing emotions isn't the answer, well, what is? This brings us to the core idea, sitting in your feelings. It means making conscious, courageous choices to stop running and instead slow down and fully experience what we feel in the service of actually processing it. It's about trading that short-term comfort, avoidance, for long-term relief and growth. Now let's talk about why allowing yourself to feel emotions. What are the benefits? What is the value of sitting with your emotions? Imagine for a moment that emotions are like ocean waves. If you're caught in a wave, the most dangerous thing to do is to fight against it frantically. If you do this, you'll exhaust yourself and risk being pulled under. But if you ride the wave, allowing it to lift you and eventually set you down, you're more likely to emerge safely. The same goes for our feelings. Emotions rise, crest, and eventually fall if we let them. They are generally temporary experiences, not permanent states. When we talk about sitting in your feelings, we mean giving the wave of emotion permission to wash over you without immediately resisting or escaping. By doing so, you allow the natural process of the emotion to unfold and move on. Psychological research supports this idea. Emotions are transitory responses, and if left to run their course, they usually peak and then dissipate. Neuroscientist Jill Bolt Taylor has famously described a 90-second rule for emotional reactions. When an event triggers an emotional reaction, the initial chemical processes in the brain, the adrenaline and the cortisol, last roughly 90 seconds. After that, any continued emotional response is typically because we are feeding it with our thoughts or resisting it, not because the original trigger is still happening. In other words, if we don't keep rehashing the story or pushing the feeling away in fear, the raw physiological emotion will naturally subside after a minute or two. Now, this insight reminds us that feeling an emotion fully, even an intense one for a minute or two, is survivable. The wave of that emotion will crest and fall. What often prolongs our suffering is not the pure emotion itself, but our reactions to that emotion. For instance, our judgment about it, I shouldn't be feeling this, our rumination on what caused it, or our attempts to fight it, are the things that actually prolong that emotion. By sitting with the feeling, we short-circuit those prolonging reactions. Acceptance helps keep a negative emotion from snowballing. A 2018 study by Brett Ford and colleagues found that individuals who habitually accept their emotions without judgment tend to experience less negative emotion in response to stress and enjoy a better psychological health overall. That's from Ford et al. 2018. Essentially, when you accept a painful response, instead of immediately trying to change it or judge it, you prevent the secondary distress that comes from saying, I hate that I feel this way, or I need this feeling to go away right now. Now, acceptance doesn't mean you like the feeling or you want it to stick around. It simply means that you're acknowledging reality. I'm angry, I'm sad, I'm anxious right now, and that's okay. It's what I'm experiencing. This attitude of openness can paradoxically reduce the intensity and duration of the emotional upset. Over time, consistently responding to your own emotions with acceptance versus avoidance or judgment is linked to greater well-being and lower rates of mood disorders. There's also a practical reason that sitting with feelings is valuable. Emotions often carry important information or needs. Emotions evolved to help us adapt and survive. Fear tells us that we might be in danger and we may need to seek safety. Sadness can signal a loss and trigger us to seek comfort or connection. Anger highlights a perceived injustice or boundary violation, thereby energizing us to address it. If we blunt these emotional signals through avoidance, we might miss the message they carry. By contrast, if we allow ourselves to fully feel and reflect on what the emotion is telling us, we can respond in a healthier way. For example, when Sarah finally allowed herself to sit with her grief, she realized how much love she had for her mother and how badly she needed to honor that love by crying, by reminiscing, maybe by creating some small memorial ritual. Those actions and acknowledgements were profoundly healing for her. Processing the emotion led to insight and meaningful action, whereas avoiding it kept her stuck. Another benefit of sitting with emotions is that it builds emotional resilience. It's really like strengthening a muscle. The first time you truly sit with, say, a wave of panic or a bout of deep sadness, it might feel really overwhelming. But when you come out the other side, you've learned that you can survive it. You realize, that was really hard, but I got over the worst of it, and now it's lighter. So the next time the fear of the feeling is a little bit less. Over time, you develop confidence that emotions, no matter how strong, are manageable and temporary, not terrifying permanent threats. Now, this is hugely empowering for clients who have historically feared their own emotions. In therapy, we often emphasize that feelings won't kill you. It's what we do to escape the feelings, like addictive or self-harming behaviors, that can really be dangerous. By facing the feeling, we take away some of its ominous mystery. It becomes a known experience that we can navigate. You might be thinking, all right, this sounds good in theory, but how exactly does one sit with feelings, especially when they're really intense or painful? Yeah, that's a great question, and this is where various psychological approaches come in with strategies and wisdom on the how of how we do this. Let's explore a few key frameworks: mindfulness and acceptance practices, somatic techniques, and skills from dialectical behavior therapy, all of which offer tools for experiencing emotions safely and fully. Mindfulness and acceptance, being present with emotions. Now, one of the most influential approaches to dealing with difficult emotions is mindfulness. Mindfulness, in a nutshell, is the practice of bringing one's attention to the present moment experience with an attitude of openness and non-judgment. When it comes to emotions, mindfulness teaches us to observe what we're feeling without immediately reacting or trying to change it. This can sound simple, but it's a skill that honestly takes practice, and it's at the heart of sitting in your feelings. In a mindfulness-based approach, if you notice an emotion like anxiety rising, you gently turn your attention toward it. You name the emotion. For example, you say something like, "I am feeling anxious right now." This act of labeling emotions has been shown to reduce the intensity of emotional responses in the brain. It's sometimes called affect labeling, and fMRI studies have found that putting feelings into words can calm the amygdala, which is the brain's alarm center, and engages the prefrontal cortex, our reasoning center. As a mindful clinician might say, you name it to tame it. After naming, you then just allow the emotion to be there, observing it like a wave moving through you. You might focus on where you feel it in your body. Is it in your chest? Is your heart pounding? Is your stomach in knots or your shoulders tight? You don't judge these sensations as good or bad. They are just the physical footprints of the emotion in your body. As you observe, you also pay attention to your thoughts, noticing if your mind is adding dramatic stories or catastrophic predictions, and gently bring your focus back to the raw feelings of here and now. Essentially, you keep your mind in the present experience of the emotion rather than getting carried away by why it's here or feeling how long it will last. Marsha Linehan, the founder of dialectical behavior therapy, borrowed heavily from mindfulness practices in her approach. In DBT, there is a skill called mindfulness of current emotions. The instructions for that skill sound a lot like what we just described. Observe your emotion. Experience it as a wave coming and going. Don't try to push it away or cling to it. And don't judge it. Just notice with curiosity. One DBT teaching is to ride the wave of your emotion, which means you surf it until it naturally crests and ebbs. Crucially, you remind yourself that no emotion lasts forever. In fact, you ask yourself, have I ever felt any one single emotion endlessly without it changing? The truth is, likely not. Even the worst grief has moments of relief, and even the deepest anger eventually softens. Emotions are dynamic. DBT encourages clients to trust this process. If you can hang on and feel it, this emotion will eventually change. Another aspect of mindfulness is radical acceptance, a term used in DBT. This means completely accepting in your mind, heart, and body that you are feeling what you feel, and perhaps that a certain situation is what it is, without resisting or denying it. This doesn't imply approval or that you want to stay this way at all. It simply means acknowledging reality. For example, radical acceptance might sound something like, I am feeling intense anger right now and I acknowledge it. It's here and I will allow it to be here for now. This attitude can prevent the additional layer of suffering that comes from fighting the anger, thinking something like, I shouldn't be angry, and this is wrong, and I have to stop this feeling. As meditation teacher Bhante Gunaratana put it, pain is inevitable, but suffering is not. The pain of an emotion coming up may be unavoidable, but the suffering is often how we respond to it. If we respond with resistance, we create suffering. Whereas if we respond with acceptance, we minimize that extra suffering. Mindfulness and acceptance techniques have a strong evidence base in mental health. Mindfulness-based therapies like mindfulness-based stress reduction and mindfulness-based cognitive therapy show that increasing a person's ability to tolerate and observe their inner experiences can reduce symptoms of anxiety, depression, and stress-related disorders. In fact, regular mindfulness meditation practice has been linked to physiological changes, such as lowering reactivity in the amygdala and increased activation in brain areas that regulate emotions. What does this mean? This means that through practice, a person's brain can become less likely to trigger an overwhelming stress response at every little emotional wave. We can actually develop what we call affect tolerance, the capacity to experience emotions with greater equanimity. Going back to our anecdote, for Sarah, who was grieving, incorporating mindfulness was a game changer. In therapy, we worked on gently noticing and naming her sadness when it came. The first time she tried this, she sat on the office couch, closed her eyes, and allowed herself to say quietly, "I feel a well of sadness in my chest." She described it as a heavy, tight feeling. She breathed and observed it. Tears were falling freely for a few minutes, and it was intense. But then she noticed something. After a while, the tightness eased a bit. The huge wave of grief crested. It didn't drown her. She said, "I actually feel a little lighter now." That's what she said at the end of the session, somewhat surprised. By week's end, she reported that those waves of sadness were becoming more tolerable. They still came, but she knew she could ride them out. Now, this is the heart of mindfulness practice, not eliminating emotions, but changing our relationship with them. Now, emotions live in the body. I want to talk a little bit about somatic experiencing. When we say, feel your feelings, it's not just a metaphor. Feelings are, in a very real sense, felt in the body. Think about how your body reacts to emotions. Your face heats up, your fists clench when you're angry, or your shoulders slump and you feel achy when you're sad. Anxiety might bring butterflies in the stomach or a racing heart. Every emotion has physiological components. Sometimes we can access and process emotions most effectively through the body. This is the premise of somatic experiencing and other body-focused therapies. Somatic experiencing, SE, developed by Peter Levine, is a trauma therapy that emphasizes awareness of bodily sensations as a way to heal emotional wounds. The idea is that when we go through something overwhelming, like trauma, our natural fight or flight energy can get stuck in the body if we don't fully process the experience. That stuck energy might manifest as chronic tension, startle responses, or numbness. Somatic experiencing techniques guide clients to tune into their internal sensations in a safe, gradual way to release that stored physiological stress. In practice, this might mean noticing a tightness in the jaw or a flutter in the belly and attending to it with curiosity and compassion, sometimes encouraging gentle movements or breaths to let the body complete its instinctive responses. By changing the interoceptive and proprioceptive sensations associated with a painful memory, the person can finally move through the emotion and out the other side. In essence, you allow the body to finish the emotional process that was interrupted. This can alleviate symptoms of trauma and stress. Even outside of trauma therapy, the body is a valuable doorway to emotional processing. Have you ever had the experience of a good cry, after which your body feels relieved and lighter? That's a somatic release. Your autonomic nervous system shifted from a higher alert sympathetic state into a calmer parasympathetic state when you let the emotion out. On the flip side, if you ever tried to swallow your tears or suppress anger, you might recall the physical discomfort that ensues. A lump in the throat, muscle tension, stomach in knots. Suppressed emotion doesn't vanish. It sits in the body as stress, and over time, this can contribute to psychosomatic issues like headaches or gastrointestinal issues. So how do we integrate somatic awareness into sitting with feelings? A simple way to do this is through a body scan. Let's say you suddenly feel anxious. Pause and gently scan from head to toe. Where do you sense that anxiety in your body? Maybe you notice your chest is tight and your breathing is shallow, and your hands are a bit cold and shaky. Now, instead of simply quickly trying to immediately stop these sensations, which is so many of our normal impulse, see if you can lean into it. For example, you might take a deeper breath and actually feel the tightness in your chest as you inhale, almost as if you're exploring it. You might gently let your hands tremble and observe the sensation of that tingling energy moving through you. Now, this may sound odd, but you're teaching your body that it's safe to experience these sensations. They are just the bodily side of anxiety, not truly dangerous in and of themselves. If the feeling is too intense, you can do this in a titrated way. Maybe you focus on the sensation for a few seconds, then you back off by opening your eyes or looking around the room to ground yourself, and then returning to the body for a few more seconds. Gradually, the sensations often change. Maybe the tightness moves or softens, the trembling slows down. This is the body processing. Peter Levine often describes watching animals shake off stress after a life-threatening event. Now, humans have the same capability if we give ourselves the chance. Let's bring back our case example of Sarah. As Sarah worked through her grief, there were moments where she felt a huge sob welling up, a tight, choking feeling in her throat and also in her chest. In somatic work, I encouraged her to pay attention to these feelings and even to give in to the urge to sob, as opposed to her old habit of swallowing it down. At one point, she described feeling like a knot in her stomach during a wave of sadness. Instead of contracting against it, she placed a hand on her belly and breathed, imagining warmth and permission for that knot to unravel. She eventually did start sobbing deeply. Her whole body shook with tears for a couple of minutes, and it was hard. She cried in a way that leaves you spent afterwards. But afterward, she reported a remarkable release. She said, "I felt this warmth and calm after I let myself do that." That was her body moving through the worst of her grief and coming back to a state of balance. Somatic therapists often highlight how completing these natural cycles leads to a sense of relief, a discharge of pent-up tension, and a return to calm. In fact, research on somatic experiencing shows promising results. Initial studies suggest it can reduce PTSD symptoms and improve well-being by helping clients safely experience and release bodily held trauma and emotion. The take-home point here is that emotions are not just in our heads. They are embodied experiences. Therefore, sitting with your feelings can literally mean sitting with your bodily sensations. Instead of only focusing on the story in your mind, drop into what your body is doing. This grounds you in the present, a very mindful thing to do, and can prevent you from getting lost in mental loops. It also allows the physiological aspect of the emotion to resolve. Sometimes words and rational thinking can't fully release an emotion, especially for trauma. The body needs to be involved. So a therapist might integrate things like deep breathing, movement, or even therapeutic touch in some cases, with consent, of course, to help a client feel safe in their body as they experience tough feelings. Techniques like progressive muscle relaxation or yoga can also assist in this bodily processing of emotion. All of these are methods of embracing the feeling in the body rather than bracing against it. We touched on DBT already with mindfulness of current emotion, but let's delve a bit more into the practical wisdom that DBT offers for handling these feelings. DBT was originally developed by Marshall Linehan for clients with severe emotional regulation difficulties, like people who are diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. So it has real-world crisis-tested tools for not avoiding emotions. One of the cornerstone ideas in DBT is that acceptance and change are two sides of the coin in healing. Sometimes the path to change, example, feeling better and reducing harmful behaviors, first requires deep acceptance. Example, fully acknowledging and experiencing where you are. This is dialectical thinking. Two seemingly opposite things, accepting the present moment and wanting to change the future, can both be true. For intense emotions, DBT teaches that the fastest way out of an emotion is through it. This is taught with the ride the wave metaphor we discussed and concrete steps to not bail out on the feeling prematurely. DBT's emotional regulation module includes a skill for processing emotions called WAVE as shorthand. Clients are instructed to notice their emotions, experience it, and not block or suppress it. They learn to refrain from acting impulsively on the emotion, for example, not sending that angry text, or grabbing a drink to numb out, or any other unhealthy behavior. Instead, just feel it. Now, this is incredibly challenging for someone in the habit of immediate avoidance or reactive coping, so DBT encourages practicing during less intense times first, like intentionally recalling a mild upsetting event and practicing observing the feelings that come without distraction for a few minutes. Over time, one builds confidence to do this with stronger emotions. Importantly, DBT also integrates distress tolerance skills to support a person who is sitting with a very intense emotion. Sitting with it doesn't mean white-knuckling an unbearable feeling with zero support. For example, a distress tolerance tactic might be self-soothing through the five senses, wrapping yourself in a soft blanket, listening to calm music while you gently allow yourself to sob or shake or feel the rage internally. You might also use grounding techniques, like describing the objects around you in the room if the emotion starts to feel too overwhelming. This helps you stay in the tolerable zone. The idea is to neither completely avoid the emotion nor get uncontrollably swept away by it. You surf the wave, using coping skills like a surfboard to keep your balance if needed. In therapy speak, you're trying to stay within the window of tolerance, that is that optimal zone where you can feel the emotion but still function, without dissociating or panicking. If you find yourself at the edge of what you can handle, a DBT trick is to dip a toe into the emotion, then use a brief distraction or calming method to back off, and then dip your toe back in again. This way, you build tolerance gradually. Let's share a brief vignette to illustrate this from a DBT perspective. A client named Jason, and this is actually a composite of a few people, had a history of explosive anger outbursts followed by shame and avoidance of any conflict. In therapy, when Jason felt anger, say triggered by a memory or of an argument with his father, his instinct was either to explode or to immediately suppress it and change the subject. But we decided to work on a middle path, simply sitting with the anger. One session, I noticed that Jason's fists were clenched out of anger as he recounted this conflict with his dad, and I invited Jason to pause the story and just focus on the feelings of anger that he was having right then. He identified that his face felt hot and his fists were tight, and I coached Jason to breathe and allow those sensations, just noticing them and noticing any urges that he had, an urge to yell and to run from the room. And I said to Jason, you don't have to act on these urges. Just notice them like clouds passing. Awesomely, Jason was able to stay with it. After a minute, he reported that his anger had risen to a peak and he felt tears of frustration in his eyes. See, often underneath anger, there is pain, right? And allowing anger can sometimes transition that feeling into deeper pain. Anyway, he said it felt very intense, but he kept breathing. A couple of minutes later, his fists relaxed and he actually looked visibly calmer. He said to me, he said, it's weird. I thought that if I didn't let it out by punching something, I'd explode. But actually, it went down on its own. This was a huge breakthrough for Jason. He learned that feeling anger fully didn't destroy him or make him do something rash. In fact, it passed and left him more clear-headed. From then on, when anger hit, instead of immediately acting out or squashing it, he practiced his mindfulness. He even used a motto we came up with, feel it, don't fuel it. Feeling it means acknowledging it and allowing it. Fueling it would be, say, mentally ruminating on how unfair it was or replaying events in his head over and over again, thus stoking the fire. And Jason learned this difference. This DBT-informed experience highlights something key. When we ride out an emotion, we often gain insights, and the intensity diminishes quicker than we expect. Jason realized that his anger often covered pain. Once the anger wave subsided, he felt sad and could then address that vulnerability, like talking about feeling unvalued by his dad. In your work or personal life, you might observe similar patterns, right? Sitting with an emotion can reveal its underlying layers. Anger often reveals that there's hurt underneath. Anxiety oftentimes shows us that underneath that is a need for reassurance. And that's where real emotional processing happens, going through the layers rather than skating on the surface. So what are some strategies for practicing emotional presence? At this point, we've covered a lot of theory and examples. Let's distill some practical strategies you can use or teach your clients to get better at sitting with feelings instead of avoiding them. Consider this a toolbox for emotional presence. I'm going to cover 10 and then we're going to close out. 1. Pause and notice. When a strong emotion hits, first pause. Resist the urge to immediately react or distract. Take a slow breath. Notice what the emotion is. Name it. I'm feeling anxious or anger is showing up. Research shows that naming the emotion already starts to calm the mind by engaging the thinking brain. 2. Body scan and breath. Check in with your body. Where do you feel this emotion? Do a quick scan from head to toe and pinpoint any tightness, heat, aches, or other sensations that correlate with the feeling. Once you've identified them, take steady breaths into those areas. For example, if you feel pressure in your chest when anxious, imagine directing a gentle breath to that area of your body. This isn't to make it go away, but this is to help you fully feel it and send a message of care to that part of your body. 3. Allow and observe. This is mindful awareness. Adopt a curious mindset. Tell yourself that it's okay to feel this. Give yourself permission. Then observe the emotion like a scientist or a compassionate friend. Notice its intensity. Does it fluctuate? Notice thoughts that come up and try to let them pass like leaves on a stream, bringing attention back to the raw feeling. You might silently note to yourself, anger is here, or sadness is here heavy in my belly. If judgment arises, if you start to think something like, this is stupid, I shouldn't feel this, or I'm weak, acknowledge those two and then gently return to just experiencing. This step is essentially mindfulness in action, as described earlier. 4. Ride the wave. Remind yourself that every emotion is temporary. Visualize the emotion as a wave or a storm that will rise and eventually fall. You don't need to force it away. You are surfing it. Sometimes even repeating a mantra can help. A mantra such as, this will pass, or just ride the wave. You are cultivating patience here. Research on emotion regulation shows that people who can tolerate that peak of the wave without impulsive action generally cope better and feel better faster. 5. No urgent action unless safety is at risk. While in the peak of an emotional surge, avoid taking major actions or making decisions. Don't send that angry email. Don't quit your job in a burst of despair. Don't send that text. Don't down a bottle of whiskey. Don't go and act out sexually. Don't numb out. Those are escape valves that short-circuit the processing. Unless you're feeling an unsafe impulse, in which case definitely use emergency safety skills or reach out for help, try to simply be with the emotion. Delay reacting. After the wave subsides, you can then simply decide if any action is needed from a calmer state of mind. 6. Self-compassionate self-talk. As you sit with the feeling, it can help to talk to yourself in a compassionate, supportive way, almost as if you were consoling a friend or a small child. You can say to yourself, for example, it's okay that you feel this. Anyone in this situation would be upset. You're brave for facing this. I'm here with you. This kind of self-compassion actually reduces emotional intensity and builds confidence. It counteracts shame and self-criticism that might arise from having the emotion. Remember that all of your feelings are human. There's nothing wrong with you for feeling anything. 7. Grounding and soothing as needed. If the emotion starts to feel too overwhelming, like a panic attack approaching or flashbacks from trauma, integrate grounding techniques. These could include stuff like looking around and naming objects you see, pressing your feet into the floor and noticing their contact, or grabbing a comforting object, a stress ball or a soft toy. You can also use your senses. You can hold an ice cube if you're panicking and that cold sensation will bring you back to the present, or smell something calming like lavender. These practices keep you within your window of tolerance so you can continue to process the feeling without being swept away. It's perfectly fine to move back and forth between focusing on the emotion and grounding in the environment. You're not avoiding, but you're regulating the intensity so that you can stay with it. 8. Journaling or expressive writing. Some people find that writing down what they're feeling helps them sit with it in a structured way. You might want to set a timer for 5 to 10 minutes and just pour out on paper or on your computer screen whatever comes up. Fear, anger, sadness, anything. The key to this is writing without filtering anything. This is a form of expressive writing, and Pennebaker in 1997 wrote a lot about this as a therapeutic intervention. It is shown to help people process and find meaning in emotional events. Oftentimes, as you write, you're essentially having the feelings, perhaps crying as you describe your pain or as you relate the event, and this writing gives a bit of a container to the experience, and it helps you feel safe. It is great for processing emotions, and I highly recommend this. 9. Seek supportive presence if needed. Sitting with feelings doesn't always mean doing it entirely alone. Sometimes having a trusted friend, family member, or therapist sit with you, literally or metaphorically, can help you feel safe enough to face the emotion. For For instance, a client might only be able to fully sob in the therapy office with the therapist there as a compassionate witness. Or you might call a friend and say, "I don't need advice right now, but could you just stay on the line while I tell you how I'm feeling? It's hard for me to feel this on my own." This isn't using the person to distract you. You're still focusing on the feeling. Rather, they're providing emotional safety. As professionals, we often co-regulate with our clients. Our calm, accepting presence helps them tolerate their storm inside. So don't hesitate to seek that kind of support yourself when needed. And lastly, 10, reflect and learn. After the emotional wave has passed, take a moment to reflect. What did you notice? Did the feelings change over time? What triggered it? And what did it feel like it was really about? Sometimes a strong reaction in the present often hooks into a past hurt. What do you need moving forward? This reflection solidifies the processing. You might discover, for example, "I was extremely anxious about giving that presentation, but after sitting with it, I realized part of the anxiety was actually about wanting to do well to make my family proud. Maybe I need to remind myself they'll love me even if I stumble." Now, these kinds of insights often emerge after we allow the feelings. And if nothing intellectual comes of it, that's fine too. The main point was that you felt it and survived, which builds emotional strength. So those are all 10 strategies. Those strategies sum up a kind of roadmap for practicing emotional presence. It's not a strict recipe, right? Some different things work for different people, but it does help give concrete ways to implement the principles we've been discussing. You can think of it as practicing emotional mindfulness, bodily awareness, and compassion all together. Okay, sitting in your feelings is not easy. Let's just acknowledge that. It's far easier to talk about accepting emotions than to actually do it when you're in the thick of that emotion. It takes courage and practice to break that habit of avoidance, but the rewards are so profound. Greater emotional freedom, improved mental and physical health, being able to show up more authentic and present with life experiences. When we stop running from our inner experience, we can finally move through it and heal. Okay, my core message today is that fully feeling and processing emotions is psychologically healthier than avoiding them. We've seen that avoidance, while tempting, tends to backfire and keeps us stuck or even intensifies our pain. In contrast, accepting and mindfully processing emotions helps them dissipate and builds resilience. Whether through mindfulness meditation, a compassionate therapy session, or a good cry in the safety of your bedroom, allow yourself to feel, because this at the end of the day is a gift to yourself. It's an act of self-care and self-validation. You're saying to yourself, "My emotions matter. I matter, and I am strong enough to face what's inside me." For mental health professionals listening, this is a reminder of why we often gently push our clients to stay with that tear or that anxious thought or that feeling in their body a little bit longer. Because we know, as research and clinical wisdom shows, that experiencing is the precursor to healing. Our role is often to be the calm anchor as someone weathers their emotional storm, modeling that acceptance. For students and anyone learning these concepts, know that developing this ability in yourself will also make you a better helper for others. It's like the airplane oxygen mask analogy. You have to secure your own mask, learn to sit with your own feelings, in order to effectively assist others with theirs. I'll end with a brief inspirational note. There's a poetic teaching I love, the idea that we can treat emotions like visitors in a guest house. This is a reference to Rumi's famous poem. Instead of slamming the door when sadness or anger comes knocking, consider opening the door and saying, "I see you. Come in for a while." It might sit heavily at first, but eventually, having been acknowledged, that emotion will get up and leave, making room for another day's guests. Maybe joy or peace. By letting it in, we paradoxically regain our home, ourselves, rather than having it breaking the door down. In the words of one of my clients who learned to face her long-buried sorrow, "When I finally let grief in, I also found that joy snuck in with it. She found that by accepting the pain, she made space for a fuller range of emotions, including positive ones that had been suppressed by her constant avoidance. I know this was longer than usual, but thank you for spending this time with me, reflecting on the importance of sitting in our feelings. I hope that you found some nuggets of insights, whether from the psychological research, the therapeutic techniques, or the stories I shared. Remember, feeling deeply is not a flaw. It's a human strength when we learn how to harness it. The next time you notice yourself or your client wanting to bolt from a feeling, see if you can pause and gently say, "Stay. It's okay to feel this." By doing so, you're not just enduring an emotion, you're building emotional courage and wisdom. Keep practicing and be kind to yourself in the process. In the long run, sitting in your feelings will deepen your empathy, your authenticity, and your capacity to heal and grow. As we wrap up today, take one more deep breath and perhaps check in with yourself. What are you feeling right now? Whatever it is, acknowledge it, feel it, and let it be. This is where the journey begins. Thank you for listening, everybody. Please like this podcast or send it to a friend who may benefit from listening to it. Until next time, may you be well.
The weather today will be glorious. Put on your sunglasses, sunscreen, and sun smiles. You're gonna love it.
You gently turn your attention toward it.